I read that you are working on breast cancer research and the dormant cancer cells that are left after treatment. Can you tell us about the two scenarios you are working on to prevent cells from spreading to other parts of the body?
Yeah, absolutely. So what happens in a lot of cases is that, you know, women come into the clinic, they have a breast tumor, the tumor is removed, and then in, you know, most cases, women are going to proceed and be, you know, totally fine, provided that they don't already have detectable disease at distant sites, meaning that they don't have the breast tumor hasn't moved into other organs and started growing there and it's already detectable. But in a fraction of women, we know that one-third of all women with breast cancer are going to get metastases. That's spread of the breast cancer into other tissues and growth at distant sites. And in about 20% of these women, the breast cancer isn't going to show up again at these distant sites for 10 years or more after treatment. So imagine that you've had a tumor, you've been treated, life goes on for the next decade, and you know everything's fine, and then all of a sudden you get some symptoms or something comes up, you go to the doctor, and you find that that breast tumor has now shown up in your liver or your lung or your bone marrow or, in some cases, the brain. And what's, you know, amazing about that is that these cells have left the breast tumor very early on. The patient had been treated with some kind of systemic therapy in many cases, and yet the cells that had left the breast survived all of that, and then they just persisted, you know, and kind of went along their way for the next 10 years, didn't grow, were essentially sleeping in these other organs, and then all of a sudden something triggered them to grow. So what we work on is understanding how this happens. How do cells live in other sites that they're not supposed to live in for 10 years or more? Why they fall asleep and what puts them to sleep, and then what eventually wakes them up. And in parallel, we're trying to figure out why they're resistant to therapy this whole time. So basically, the two approaches that we're taking is, one, by understanding why they fall asleep, we're trying to come up with ways to basically copy what the body does to put these cells to sleep, to keep them asleep indefinitely. And, you know, because we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket, the other approaches generally that we're working on have to do with how we can make these cells sensitive to therapy. So women are getting chemotherapy or other systemic therapy at the time of the resection of their tumor. Why can't we make that therapy effective not only against residual cells in the breast, but against all of these other sleeping cells throughout the body? So those are the two things that my lab is trying to do right now.
Is this area of cancer research new, and what made you want to study dormant cells?
Yeah, so this area of cancer research, yeah, you could say it's pretty new. I mean, this discovery that single tumor cells sit around our body sleeping is one that is not incredibly old. It was one that was, it was something that was discovered by a woman named Ann Chambers and then also followed up on by another pathologist at University of California, San Diego, named David Taran. And they first showed this in mice and then, you know, in the early 90s. And then that was followed up on in patients in the late 90s and then the early 2000s. And it was actually found that there you can detect single tumor cells in the bone marrow of breast cancer patients, even those that are at very, very early stage. So there's a stage of breast cancer called ductal carcinoma in situ, which basically means that the cells lining the milk duct that have transformed into cancer cells has started to proliferate, but they have only proliferated into the duct. So they don't actually breach the other side and start going into the breast tissue. So it's always thought that that stage of breast cancer is very contained. There's no invasion occurring. And in fact, when they started looking in the bone marrow of patients with this in situ form of breast cancer, they started finding that in a relatively high percentage of these women, there are already cells that have left that contained lesion and wandered into the bone marrow. And so, you know, this research into dormant cells has really picked up steam in the last few years. And as far as why I got into it, I was doing my postdoctoral research in the laboratory of a woman named Mina Bissell, who really pioneered the concept in the late 70s and early 80s that we shouldn't just think about cells from the standpoint of, you know, or we shouldn't just think about cancer cells from the standpoint of changes in their DNA that have made those cells abnormal, but we should think about how the environment of these cells keeps them in check and how that something has to happen to the environment to allow this aberrant genome to emerge as also an aberrant phenotype, or really what most people would consider a tumor. So taking that standpoint and really inspired by all of her work when I was in her lab and my discussions with her and everything else, we decided we really wanted to start focusing on this problem of tumor dormancy and specifically starting to study these cancer cells, these breast cancer cells, at distant sites to see how our healthy tissues, like a healthy liver or a healthy bone marrow of a breast cancer patient, is able to keep the tumor cells in check despite all of their genomic abnormalities or genetic abnormalities, and then get an understanding of that. And then, you know, as I've started my own lab here at Fred Hutch, been starting to figure out, you know, how we can actually start treating these cells and what we could do to prolong patient survival and hopefully prevent metastases from emerging in this population of women, you know, who are susceptible to metastases 10 or more years down the road.
Cool, thanks. So I've also heard that we all have cancer cells inside of us. Is that true? And what can we do to keep those cells of ours sleeping or dormant?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit of an exaggeration. I hear people say that quite often. I think in reality what happens is that, you know, our bodies normally have ways to deal with cells when they do something that they're not supposed to do. You know, so our cells are dividing. You know, we have cells inside of us that are dividing, you know, at any given moment. And typically that division goes just fine and everything goes okay. But if something goes wrong, like one of our chromosomes, you know, rather than two of the same chromosome getting segregated into each of the two daughter cells, maybe a part of a chromosome sticks to another chromosome, and then so one cell doesn't get an equal share. Typically, that gets detected, and then those cells get eliminated. Sometimes that doesn't happen, and you know, in certain cases, these gain and loss of chromosomal pieces is something that is very symptomatic of specific cancers, you know, like specific chromosome additions and deletions, or this like kind of cross-contamination of chromosomes is indicative and specific to certain cancers. It's kind of, you know, and thought of as sort of an initiating event. But yet all of us don't get cancer, you know, and even those of us who do get cancer typically only get one form of cancer in our lifetime. You know, it's a lot more rare to have somebody get two forms of cancer. So why is that? You know, we have 10 trillion or more cells in our body, and cancer's being started by sometimes only one cell. And, you know, we have all these events happening that could cause cancer, yet it doesn't. So, I mean, you know, I would argue that our bodies are quite good at suppressing cancer. You know, it's just already set up that way. We've evolved to be that way. Otherwise, we'd all be getting cancer all over the place and dying. So clearly that doesn't happen. There have been autopsy studies where people have studied, you know, people who die of car accidents, and then they examine their prostate. And the incidence of, like, lesions in the prostates of these car accident victims, you know, people who would have never been diagnosed with prostate cancer, they, you know, they have, like, lesions in 100-fold more prostates than prostate cancers ever detected. So, yeah, that does argue that more of us have, like, some type of a lesion in our tissues, like the prostate, like the breast, like the thyroid gland, than those who ever actually, you know, manifest with cancer. And our bodies are pretty good at preventing that switch from ever really fully manifesting. So I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, behaviors that we take on and that we do, and most of them are fine. You know, I mean, there's some study out there that can link almost anything that we do to you know, being some kind of a cancer-causing, you know, activity. But I think for the most part, unless you're doing something flagrantly, you know, unsafe, for instance, like smoking, and which is very well known to increase your risk for lung cancer, or, you know, working in an office laden with asbestos, then, you know, we got to live our lives. We got to make sure we have fun and be healthy and hope that our bodies are going to take care of the rest.
This interview is part of C89.5 Duwanting Project, where we share ideas how to live healthy. Do you have any word of wisdom for our listeners? What is your one thing that you do to stay healthy in your busy life?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, all of us tend, you know, as we move into our careers, we think that we're very busy and that we, you know, what we're doing is very important. And, you know, I certainly feel that way about my work. But I think it's really important to also realize that our interactions with other people and the way that we kind of affect others that we encounter in our daily lives is very important, whether it be our family, whether it be our friends, whether it be strangers. So, you know, I think that doing good and being good are kind of two of the most important things that you can do. And I think in terms of, you know, staying healthy and everything else, you got to do the things that make you happy and make you feel good. You know, for me, it's exercise, and I try to make sure I get, you know, some form of exercise every day. And I know that when I do, my days tend to go really well. And when I don't, those are the days where other things tend to snowball. So I think, you know, just setting up kind of a routine for yourself, whatever that may be, of things that you know are going to help you kind of put that bounce in your step and get your day moving in the right direction. Those are the kind of things that people should do in the morning. I think that I know for me, that's very, very helpful.
All right. Thank you so much, Doctor, for spending some time with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.